discussing the economics of the mineral supplements.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark. Hopefully this helps better understand some of the economics tied with the things that Mark's just kind of gone through in terms of recommended practices and some of the ins and outs there. So I'm going to give a brief introduction to some risk management ideas and concepts as a way of moving into this minerals question as to whether or not it makes sense for your operation and how you might want to think about it in terms of whether it fits, how well it fits, and so on. One of the interesting things about risk is that it pervades our lives. We all are familiar with risk. When I say that word, a number of things probably come to your mind. It's not like you don't understand what I mean. But the funny thing about it is that we don't have language that goes with that. We don't get training in it, even in primary school, let alone in college. We don't take classes on managing risk. One author writes it out like this, is that we're not risk savvy. We don't have language about it, and we don't really know, even if we started talking about it, how to form words, you know, and concepts about it in a lot of cases. And so we don't really know how to take it into consideration when we're making management decisions, is the point. We know it's in there, and yet, again, we don't really have a good feel for how to include it. And another funny thing about it is we have this feeling that it's really a complex subject matter, and that it should require some really complex something or another to build it into our analysis, and that's not necessarily true, at least according to some authors. There are those that think you need really sophisticated analysis, super powerful computer models, and in order to even get close to an answer or to evaluate alternatives one against another. What do I mean by this? I guess the example I'm using lately is if you think about a case where we have to cross a busy city street, two-way traffic, maybe it's four lanes and there's maybe no crosswalk, we want to go from this side to the other side, we don't get out our tape measure and start figuring out just how far away cars are, do we? And pull out our laptop or get on our phone and calculate just how fast we have to move in order to avoid being hit. It's kind of a complex relationship, though, if you think about it. It really is a busy street. We might be in our car. It's a little safer than trying to do it on foot. But you think about that. There's a lot of things we take into account, and yet we wouldn't really think about it much. We'd look at it. We have a feel for it inside, is what I'm trying to say. And we'd be able to get across that street. Now, we might adjust our speed, and we might choose to turn back and try again. But we're smart like that inside. We don't have to have computers tell us what to do. That's the point here with the second bullet, is that we actually have a lot of intuitive good sense about how to manage risk because we deal with it all the time. Maybe not in terms of choosing about a mineral supplementation program or trying to decide which genetics in our herd need adjustment or, you know, which new bulls we ought to be thinking about to try to make the improvements we really would like to see in our herd, and so on and so forth. But there are a lot of things that we do know about. We just don't know how to write them down. And so the point is, risk management alternatives and our ability to evaluate some of that stuff doesn't require a lot of complex, high-powered analysis. And if there really are rules of thumb we probably operate with. And yet, risk management is difficult, it says here, is the third bullet, because, again, we don't know really how to talk about it. So even if we were to meet the neighbor at the fence line and we're trying to talk about, I'm thinking about using this new marketing strategy or trying to make some improvements in the herd, and I think this might be a benefit, but to talk about what their experience might be on their side of the fence and how much of an improvement they had and whether you think it would really work on your place, if you see what I'm getting at, there are a lot of factors there. As Mark is already described, the forages aren't necessarily the same, even though we might all go up the mountain the same way in terms of property line and so on, because of where we're located and whatnot, there may be some other differences that gives us a different mix of forage. in which case we have to manage that system differently. And it's human nature that we would like to have things to be certain, right? That we could plan for the future and know what the future would be. It's just inside of us that we'd like that. And yet, we'd all agree that certainty probably is a pretty rare thing. Almost in every dimension of our lives, we start thinking about it. So the point is, we should plan for uncertainty, and yet we find that uncomfortable. We'd rather have it be locked down and just be able to know what the price is going to be when we sell our calves, wouldn't we? Even if it's a low price, if we could just know what it is, we could manage to that objective. The problem is, it's changing. It changes all the time, and so what we have to do is manage with that kind of idea. So that's where risk enters in, right? That variability. And the other point about it is that if it were locked down, and if it was just following a recipe card to success in farm and ranch management, well, then everybody would do it, wouldn't they? Anybody who wanted to be a farmer, well, you just draw that recipe card out of the file and just, and there wouldn't be any profit in it, is the point, because everybody could follow the recipe. The fact that you have to deal with uncertainty as a manager is what gives us skills that people walking down Main Street don't have. So it's a good thing that there's some risk in their variability, because that's where the profitability comes from. Interestingly enough, risk, as we're talking about it, comes from variability and change that we can't really predict. But it also comes about through our understanding or perception of that change and what we think it's going to do to us should certain events happen over here or certain outcomes happen over that way. So it's not just the facts, it's actually how we perceive it to impact us. So there's a human dimension to it, is what I'm trying to say. And there certainly are other factors in terms of how we interact with other people and markets and so on that basically influence us in terms of how the uncertain future unfolds. The literature describes it like this, so this may be helpful to you. But basically there are these two big categories of unknownness in the future. One's variability, one is uncertainty. And variability is described as that change that occurs and what we can expect in the future purely due to chance. So an example might be if we had a die here and I was going to roll it. We all know that there's a 6 sides to a regular dice, right? It's not one of those weird ones. It has 25 different faces. 6 sides, and we intuitively know that there's an equal chance of rolling any particular number. However, if you've never seen a die before, and I just pulled it right out here, and we were talking about it, I said, roll it, what would you expect? Well, you might not know about that if you've never seen one of these things, never thought about it. You wouldn't really know, except that you'd know there'd be some chance, right? See what I'm getting at is that there's a chance. So even though we know in the case of a 6-sided die that there's 1/6 chance to roll any particular number, there is no one in here that regularly could predict if I rolled it exactly what number would come up. That's the point. It's variability due to chance. There's a different kind of variability, though, that has to do with our lack of knowledge about the future. Like, we might not know all the outcomes. For example, if my die was weighted, theoretically, over time, if I roll that makes some number, or maybe a set of numbers, more likely. And we wouldn't discover it until we use that die quite a little bit, see? So there's that, let alone that we might roll some number, we've got such and such a calf price. Okay, we sold our calves, but what are the meaning of that? How does that play out now in our management system going forward? There may be certain things that happen, right? There's events that we encounter as managers, whether we got more precip this month than we figured on. Mark came out and identified a different forage grass than we had thought we were managing. If we started a mineral supplementation program and cows are starting to look a little better, there are these things that happen, but we don't necessarily know how far that takes us and the implication of those things into the future. Part of the point is we can learn more about how to manage that. As managers, there's some things we can do with this uncertainty. We can't do much with variability because it's there. It's inside the system, right? But variability or change that's due to uncertainty, we can learn to manage that a little bit better, maybe by better understanding the alternatives, by better understanding what the outcomes mean for us, and maybe even just better understanding what the alternatives are. There is this idea that there's known risk. We know in a lot of cases that the system we're managing has potential for turning out in certain ways. And then there's also the fact that maybe this confluence of events, these set of facts that are happening right here today, may generate an outcome that's never happened before. Like those 1 in 100 year events of rainfall or hurricanes or an earthquake happens. They don't happen often, but it wouldn't be unusual to have an earthquake in the Pacific Rim, would it? I mean, we're supposed to expect that stuff. And yet when Mount St. Helens went off, that was kind of a big deal. People noticed. So, you know, there's some things we might reasonably expect, but we don't actually plan for them. And then there are things that can happen that nobody knows about. So when things change, especially big picture things are changing, there can be some things that we just can't know about, unknown unknowns that we can't manage, right? That's the point. We can't manage that kind of risk. Point is we need to focus on the things that we can get a handle on and might make a difference with in terms of our management. As an aid to thinking about this, in agriculture, there are basically these five big categories of risk that we tend to talk with folks about how to manage. Marketing and price risk, production risk are the two that we talk and think about most commonly in agriculture. So production risk would be, you know, what kind of forage production are we getting? What kind of weights are we weaning with our calves? That sort of thing. And what would affect that? Markets, of course, are a lot in a lot of ways what we have to accept is the price in terms of selling our commodities. And risk coming from the financial management of our business and how we manage those things. Legal or institutional risks from regulation or other kinds of sources, what that's intended to imply there. And then human resource risk. Typically think about that as employees and managing the people in our business, but it also might be us, right? We too, as the manager, have limitations and biases and blinders. We only see certain alternatives, which we might overcome by getting training. Another dimension of human risk is a lot of operators in agriculture want to pass the operation to the next generation. And that's a human or people thing, given it's a family or relationship, but we don't often know how to handle that very well. And those five sources just are intended to cover the waterfront of risks that we manage. You know, how you look at it is clearly part of your outlook in the world. It's not a good or a bad, but risk is part of our business in terms of agriculture, and not all of us see it the same way. So in some cases, that might be an explanation of why we don't get along with the next generation so well, because the next generation may see certain things that we're facing in the way of decisions as not as threatening as we do. Or we might see the opportunity, and since we're a little older, have a lot more experience, we might see that we can make this move, whereas the spouse or the brother we're in business with or the sister, whatever the situation is, might say, you know, I'm not comfortable going there. But they may not have the vocabulary to say that, and instead they just say no, or somehow try to make sure that doesn't happen because they're not comfortable with it. And that's just human nature, I guess. We perceive and we view the risk differently, just like we all have different personality types. That doesn't mean we're bad people because we don't go along with this new venture. It's just that we don't feel comfortable with that inside, and that's okay. If you're working with other people, though, I'm pointing this out because sometimes that's the point of conflict. And until you can get to a place where you can discuss it, you may not get past that as a hurdle. The point here is that if there's no risk involved, the profit or the reward part of it probably is pretty low. And so zero risk isn't the goal, I guess, is part of what I'm trying to get across there. You aren't actually shooting for that. But instead, recognizing that risk is part of it is that we need to think about managing it. So in that case, what we're trying to do is minimize the set of bad outcomes we might be facing, or to minimize the likelihood of those bad outcomes occurring. And instead, where we might also have some flexibility or options to manage and make choices to make the good outcomes more likely, or where we get to choose those, we choose them, or we might be able to adjust the probability or the likelihood of the good outcomes happening more often, and we try to influence that. And there are different strategies to use. In general, tend to follow this sort of three-way thought process here. We could maybe reduce the risk through some of our management. We might increase our ability to bear the risk, or there are options also for transferring the risk. There are insurance options there where we might share the risk with another entity. I find the challenge isn't so much to think up some of the options, but rather to compare the options. How do I know this alternative is a better option, or that alternative, or another one? This is an area we've tried to focus with our efforts in RightRisk, is to build tools to help people evaluate those alternatives. And the tools we have created are all available for free, and you can get to them at rightrisk.org. We are going to use one of those tools to evaluate the mineral supplementation question. And that tool is called the Risk Scenario Planner. And again, it is up on that website that I mentioned earlier, and loaded up with examples if you want to use it. The way it works is it walks you through four different ways of thinking about a management decision you're going to make. And it says, what are the positives and what are the negatives? On the positive side, we look at added returns, which we hope there are some of, right? But it might also be a reduced cost, and that would be a benefit to us as well, right? On the negative side, there may be a change that we're thinking about may have the implication of some added cost, or it may reduce the return that we're earning in some dimension of the business. And so what the tool does, it's called the Partial Budget Framework, and ag economists have been teaching this for decades. The thing that we've done with the tool is built risk into it, as you will see here in a little bit. So typically, you would take these four different areas and add up the numbers that you put in those boxes and see where would you come out. Is it a positive number? Well, it implies maybe you want to try it. If it's a negative number, you might say, well, I don't know. I'm going to lose money. Why would I do that? So what we're going to do here in our next set of slides is walk through a couple of examples that we put together to help show how this mineral supplementation program might work. In the first case, we are going to look at an operation that has a couple hundred cows near Waimea that has not regularly supplemented with mineral in any particular way over the last 15 years or so they're operating. So they have never supplemented, and we're going to start supplementing with a commercial mineral mix, like Mark talked about. It's a balanced mix, like that label that he showed, that includes these various components. You put out, it has salt in there to try to encourage them to eat it. And we're going to start with a number that we've basically calculated using this study and come around to is about $31.89 per cow per year that would cost. And then we're going to ask, what else do we need to consider besides we know we've got to pay that to make sure that the 2 ounces per cow per day are available to that 200-cow herd? So the first thing is, well, we probably got to, if we haven't been doing this before, we probably need to think about labor. We're going to have to go out there and put it out, or at least check that it's available, right? And so we're estimating that we're probably going to need around 42 hours three-quarters of an hour per week, or in total about 42 hours a year using $20 an hour. That's going to be how we calculate how much the labor costs. We are also going to have to build 2 bunks. We're not going to go overboard. Remember, Mark said we need 1 bunk for every 50 to 100 head So we're going to use the largest number and try to minimize our cost for bunks. But we might, you know, an option might be to build more than just two. But again, trying to minimize our cost, we're estimating those to cost about $500 each, and that they would last about 10 years, all right? And we're also going to put a little interest cost on that money because we're going to set it aside in these bunks and try to include that in the decision. All right, what else? Well, we probably have a little more wear and tear on our vehicle or on our four-wheeler as we go out there and check, make sure that things are set up right, take out more mineral or take out the mineral, so on. So we're estimating about $300 a year we'll have in terms of fuel and vehicle maintenance. And we also are going to need to order the mineral up, make sure it's put out. If we have a hired person, making sure that they're putting it out where it needs to be, that it gets moved around, et cetera. So some management costs, not too much, but $250 a year to actually manage this new component of our business. But then we try to bring in the more interesting dimension of this. So what would we expect in terms of benefits? So the way the story is described here is they talk to their neighbors, and based on their experience using a commercial mineral mix of a similar kind of cow herd, they're actually selling an additional 40 weaned calves at 6 months of age and about 400 pounds than we are. So we think we probably could plan, when we get this up and running and the cows are doing better, that we could plan to sell an additional 40 calves, and our current market price for kind of figuring on an average basis is $135 a hundredweight. In addition, because our cows are in better shape and the calves are in better mineral health, we think we could reduce our veterinary costs by about 10%, and they're about currently about $6,000 a year. So we think we can reduce our vet cost about $600 a year by having a mineral program in place. Furthermore, because our cows are actually functioning now, and we aren't pulping and keeping cows that aren't cycling and aren't actually breeding and generating a calf for sale, that we actually won't need to cull as heavy, because all the cows that are in the herd are actually doing what they're supposed to do. And that, we calculated, comes out to about 17 fewer cull females each year we would not be selling out of the operation. Instead, they'd stay in the operation and be productive. So this represents a reduction in revenue because we're not selling cull animals. And furthermore, we actually save by not having to transport those 17 head out and market them when we cull would have normally culled our females. And as we thought about that transportation and marketing costs on females, we also realized that we need to include transportation and marketing costs on the extra 40 calves, right? So that's going to come to a total of $536 a year for extra marketing and transportation on those 40 calves. So a lot of different dimensions we're trying to include. And then we're also going to include risk in the form of varying prices for that commercial mineral mix. We're going to allow that to vary between $29.46 and $39.86 per cow per year. So to realize that there actually is going to be a fluctuation. And because the primary benefit comes in the form of additional calves and pounds of calf that we're going to ultimately sell, we're going to allow calf price to vary between $120 to $165 a hundredweight to try to account and make sure that if markets happen to trend downward, that this mineral program actually makes sense. It's a lot of things to take into account. Any questions? Well, I got one for you. Should they do it? We put it into the tool, and so it actually uses all four of those boxes I was talking about: added returns, reduced cost, added cost, and reduced returns. To take that all into account, it actually totals $2,534 for the 200 cow herd unit that we would put it on. So So it's a positive number, and it's over $2,000 a year. We should expect. Should they do it now, do you think? But this is just a cash, write it on, you know, the back of the envelope, tally up the numbers, and the ag economist historically would have just said, so should they do it? Then you get to choose. I'm going to take you another step further and say, what if we include this variability? Now, we're going to let that mineral price vary, and we're also going to allow the calf prices to vary, like I said, so that's just showing the input screens. And what should we expect? The tool, this program we wrote, basically takes those two different ranges of price change, okay? And it says, all right, we're going to pull one number, one possible number out of that range of prices from each of the two different, the calf price and for the mineral price. And it does that 1,000 times, pulls a pair of numbers. And so we get the variation, right? Sometimes it's a high calf price, sometimes it's low, sometimes it's a high mineral price, sometimes it's low. But 1,000 is supposed to be the number you use where the distribution kind of stabilizes, right? So that's a lot of calculations. You could do it on a piece of paper, same way, but what it generates for us is a graph. It basically shows us the range that we should expect, and it ties probability to it. So if we use the mouse in the program, you can actually drive it along this curve, and it'll read out a number, a dollar value here, we call it net benefit, and the associated probability. What's the value of that, you're saying? It lets us get a feel for what could we expect if we let those two things vary. And that $2,500 or thereabouts cash that we calculated just kind of straight off the back of the envelope now varies from a maximum of around $6,100 a year. So it's 100% probability we'll be below that, down to a low of about -$253 a year. We basically have a 0% chance of being below that. Or, interestingly to me, is we have about a 50-50 chance of being at right about $2,700 a year. Now, should they do it? Allowing things to vary, we have a little more of a feel, if you will, for how things might change, and we're still doing pretty well. But some people might argue that that's not enough of a benefit to justify what it takes. And I'm okay with that, too. The next example is where we are going to take somebody who's been doing a commercial mineral mix program and try the cafeteria style. How would that look? Would it be a better deal, or would they be worse off? So it's kind of upgrading, if you will, or trying a different alternative. And how would it leave us? So in this situation, we have a 500-cow ranch, and they have been doing a commercial mineral mix program over the last 10 years, which costs them that same $31.89 per cow per year. And they are going to upgrade, if you will, or try a cafeteria-style approach, which is expected to reduce the cost of supplementation to about $13.10 a cow. It's quite a bit of difference, right? Basically a third of the cost. How would we expect that to affect them? First of all, they need more bunks because it's a bigger cow herd, for one thing, but they also have more components to put out there. So these bunks are basically the other one, but it's two-sided. Now we've got more compartments, and they're going to cost $1,000 a piece. So again, a bunk per 100 head, we basically are going to have five bunks at $1,000 a piece, 10 years life, and 7% interest. So some of the same sort of assumptions. They also have additional labor cost, but in this case, we're expecting it's going to take about an hour a week because they've got those other bags, different components, take a little more time once they go out there to check and so on. Not a whole lot, though. We set 3/4 of an hour for the other example. We'll also have additional vehicle, and I think those costs are basically the same for that, but our management costs, because we're buying these different components, making sure they're on hand, probably going to take us a little more time to make sure they're ordered, make sure they're being put out correctly, and so on. So double the cost there, $500 a year to manage that component of it. And we're going to allow the free choice mineral mix cost to vary from a low of $12.90 to up to $19.19 per cow per year. So variation around what we estimated was about $13 per cow is the average. And we allow that commercial mineral mix to also vary in terms of the cost per cow. Should they do this, do you think? Well, the way it works out is we have some reduced costs, because we're not feeding the commercial mineral mix at the rate we did before, and we're reducing the labor and so on because we're not doing that program, but instead are adding the free choice approach, and so we have added costs there. So that's how they offset. And the total comes out to $6,900, figuring the back of the envelope just a cash basis. But they'd be better off making the switch. Looks like a real positive development there, but what if we allow those prices to vary? How would that affect it? This is what the curve looks like if we do that run of the tool and do the 1,000 draws. And so what are the numbers? Well, the top end is $9,700 that we could expect of changing to a cafeteria-style approach. So we would expect we wouldn't probably ever get over that, but we would also expect to be above roughly $4,000 a year return on that program, or about 50-50 chance of earning about $6,900 a year. Any questions about that, or assumptions, or how that turned out? Okay, well, this tool can be used for other management decisions as well, and it is available on that website with a guide that describes a couple of other example decisions. If you're interested, you can download the tool and the guide and use it to evaluate other kinds of decisions. This last couple of slides are just to point out, we also have a number of online courses and modules. I think there's something like 15 different ones on the website now, developed with public dollars, so they're all available at no cost. They cover things like record keeping, financial analysis, end-of-life planning, transition planning into the next generation, how to incorporate and evaluate risk within farm management decisions, et cetera. There's a lot of different materials there. Whole other toolboxes. We actually have a textbook we wrote on risk management in agriculture, so there's a lot of material there. We also have some different risk management profiles describing typical farm management decisions and how different operators have included risk and the analysis, and then in just 4 pages, they're really short, but talks a little bit about how that turned out. If you're curious, you can check those out. I think there's something like 13 or 15 of those up there now. We also have a monthly newsletter, no cost to subscribe. It's emailed out, currently reaching something like 5,100 people around the world. If you want to be on the list, you can be, or you can download or go online and look at them. They are all archived online at this point after 7 years. There's quite a few different titles that have come across, and they're kind of interesting to take a look at. Just a brief mention of some of the other materials as I gave you that handout. Mentions those in the URLs, but certainly a lot of other things that we've worked and helped folks with over the last 15 or 20 years in our work with the Right Risk Program in general, trying to build some materials and tools to help people evaluate that for themselves.